I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Mother Tongue Publishing has a new book in their remarkable Unheralded Artists of British Columbia series, The Life and Art of Harry and Jesse Webb. Joining me now is the author, Adrian Brown, who's in a unique position to write this book, as her parents were Harry and Jesse Webb. I'll ask her about her mother and father and the circles in which they were a part of, an important group of artists, musicians, writers, and poets all working in the 1950s and 1960s. It was, as it turns out, quite a colorful, exciting time in the art scene, and this book gives us a view onto that era. The book tells a story of two artists and two parents. It wasn't a lucrative time, but a lot of fascinating art was created. Oils, watercolors, pastels, as well as silk screens, collages, and lino cuts. It was a progressive and interpretive time, and art in Vancouver was by no means immune. Both Harry and Jesse were involved with the literary magazine PM, which, despite its short life, is highly regarded and remembered. The jazz scene was something that Jesse and Harry were a part of, founding members, in fact, of the Cellar Jazz Club, which was at Broadway and Watson, just off of Main Street, which appeared in the National Film Board documentary In Search of Innocence. I'll ask Ms. Brown about how this book came about, and the art that was created, and the exhibit at the West Vancouver Museum that opens this week and that runs until the 6th of December. Visit westvancouvermuseum.ca for information on Harry and Jesse Webb, artists in Vancouver's jazz age, as well as mothertonguepublishing.com. Adrian Brown is a landscape artist and garden designer and is the curator-editor of the Web Atlas of Landscape Architecture in BC. She is past president of the BC Society of Landscape Architects and a fellow of the Canadian Society of Landscape Architects. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Adrian Brown. Ms. Brown, good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. So how did this book come about?
Well, it was a book that was a project that my mother had in mind for a number of years, and she lived for more than, well over a decade longer than my father did. So even though they hadn't been together for some time, she, with my blessings and support, she took all of their art and had begun to organize it and preserve and frame, and also to collect the archive. So really, it was her project. She wanted to write a book. She didn't manage to really create a manuscript. She spent most of her time sorting through the materials and organizing and protecting things. So when she passed away in 2011, I inherited the project.
How did she regard, because you begin the book by talking about all the stuff that she'd accumulated over the years, that you almost describe it as she was a bit of a hoarder in terms of the stuff that she kept. When you went through it all, because I'm assuming it's a time-consuming process, and you saw all the art, did she give you a sense, when she was alive, about how she regarded what Harry and her created?
Yes, she did. She talked to me a great deal. In fact, as an only child, of parents who didn't always talk to each other in the later years of their marriage, they both talked to me about everything, and she spent a good deal of time talking to me about what she thought of the art in retrospect, what she thought was of value, and why. So I was really receiving quite a lot in the way of opinion on those points.
Was it fun for you to learn about what living in Vancouver was like in the 50s and 60s?
Yes, I actually was delighted to explore the period as much as I could, the period before I was born. I was born in, I guess it's approximately halfway through the story, in the late 1950s, and so I remembered quite a bit, but what I didn't remember and what I wasn't there to know, I was able to talk to people who were there and talk to them on the telephone, talk to them in person, exchange letters, emails. It was remarkable how many people I was able to connect with over the last couple of years.
And that must be fun, people that you probably didn't know heretofore, filling in the story of your parents.
Yes. The my primary source was the typographer and book designer, Bob Reed, who was there from the beginning on the project, and I could email him at 11 o'clock at night, and I could have an answer to a question by 11:30. So he was always on hand, and had been friends with them since they met working on PM Magazine in 1951. And there were other people around who, like Jim Kilburn and Ken Hole of The Cellar, who were also available by telephone or email. So it was just great.
The great thing that you do in this book is evoke the times in which they lived and worked. I mean, they were really fun-sounding times. I mean, there's also a lot of struggle, obviously. I mean, being an artist is not easy. But you really do feel, reading the book, like you're amidst, as you say, and as you describe it in the book, sort of the rain-soaked pavement and neon that Vancouver was in the middle part of the 20th century.
Yes, it's interesting, even looking back to my own childhood, some of the things I read about the evolution of art from, say, 1950 to the early 60s, and the mood, mm-hmm. how, and Scott Watson puts it very well in some of his essays about that time, is going from a post-war feeling of a somber feeling with very muted colors to something that by the early 60s was almost ecstatic in its brilliance. And and that shift in mood was really perhaps a precursor to the feeling that we had in the 1960s, that there was so much hope associated with design and technology, and that the future was a very promising thing.
Now, your father was born in Ontario, is that correct?
Yes.
And so he ends up here, I guess, in the late 40s, is that right?
Just after the war.
Yeah. And your mother, Jessie, she was born here, is that correct?
She was born in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
Grandview. She was the one who's really her path to going to the art school was quite focused. She was chosen by her teachers at the age of 8 to go to the Saturday morning classes that were offered by the art school. And she did that, and she studied under the artists like B.C. Binning, who were teaching there at the time. And she was inspired. So by the time she got to senior high school, she was able to enroll at King George High School in a program in grade 12 where you could take your first courses at the art school while you were still in high school, and then just do your core curriculum. So she was very determined to go to art school. My father was thought when he was in his early teens that he would go study graphic design at Ryerson Tech, but his family sent him to sea training school, and he ended up in the Merchant Marine. So in 1946, he had an opportunity to follow his father to the West Coast, and going to the Vancouver School of Art was something that was an option because of the veterans' education credits. So to train the veterans one way or another, whether they went to university or to more of a technical school, they had the financial help from the government at the time.
Sort of like a Canadian GI Bill, I guess, right?
Yes, very much so.
The Vancouver School of Art, that evolved into what's known today as Emily Carr, is that right? Yeah, and so that was, I guess, at the time, that would have been in front of where Victory Square is now?
No, it actually, let's see, Victory Square, I guess,
like the
it was uphill, yes.
Oh, so it's the VCC, I guess. That
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, just on the uphill side of Victory Square, you're correct.
Yeah.
And on the other side, next to the Playhouse Theater.
Now, is that where they met?
They met at the art school in class. I don't know which class. It was probably 1948 when they met.
And did they tell you about say the courtship and what attracted one another?
My mother said that my father had broken up with a young woman that he had been dating, and my mother was aware of that, and she knew him in class and and was interested in knowing him better, and also realized that he wasn't eating very much. And she would bring him bananas, and they started talking, and it very quickly moved into a point where they were, you know, inspired by the same things, understood how much they had in common. They began going to beer parlors to draw, and it went from there.
Now, as for the art that they created, as for the art that they were interested in, are there influences, perhaps, or are there certain people that they both liked that sort of motivated them to create their own art?
Yes, it one of the things that I really had to think about when I was writing the story was how many influences they really had in common. They were really inspired by different things. When they were young, it was certainly what they had in common was being inspired by Dada and by early 20th century French art, like Cubism. But primarily, what was the current inspiration at the time was abstract expressionism, especially the American artists. And then they each had their own take on it. My mother continued to be more inspired by French artists through her life, and she continued to go back to Cézanne even up until the 1990s. She still found there was more to learn from Cézanne. Whereas my father was, he had different influences. He was more in the graphic end, and he loved cartoons and wasn't as painterly in who he looked to.
And so did they view this early on, art, as, say, a hobby, or did they think that this was going to be their livelihood?
I don't think it was ever a hobby, no. And when it had to be a hobby, when my father had, when he had become a landscape architect in the mid-50s, and that took all his time, and there really wasn't time to be an artist and make it the focus of his life. He would do drawings from time to time, but I don't think he ever saw it as a hobby. It was, for him, it was either you were going to do it or you weren't.
And so, Rob, you highlight in the book the struggles that an artist has in this era. For them, it wasn't an easy time to make a living, say.
No, and it's interesting to see how little it's changed over time.
Yeah.
In those days, and it continues to be the case today, that if you're going to be an artist, you have to spend many years doing something that is usually teaching. So the artists at that time, like Jack Shadbolt and Donald Jarvis and Peter Aspel and many of their teachers and mentors, taught, and then they'd make their own art on the weekends and in the evenings, but they were primarily teachers. So that really was continues to be the route that so many artists go in order to make a life.
And the struggle in terms of making a life, in terms of subsisting, did that affect them from then on to the rest of their life?
Neither of them came from particularly affluent worlds, but they did make a conscious choice when they were first married to live in a fairly impoverished state in order to spend most of their time making art. And so they both consciously maintained part-time jobs only. He worked at the post office and at Davidson Boatyards making fiberglass boats and selling art supplies, and she did similar kinds of jobs. So that what they were trying to do was mark out, as opposed to being a full-time teacher and making art on the side, to try and mark out time during the day where you could be an artist and then have a job around it that would pay for the groceries. It was something they tried. It wasn't very successful, but they tried it for a number of years.
Yeah, she was working at a bank when she was pregnant with you, and then they laid her off. I mean, that's not too long ago, isn't it? You know.
Well, yeah. It was at that time it was.
It was the norm, wasn't it?
And for the employer to say, well, yes, you're 6 months pregnant, you got to go now. and not give the woman the choice, if she's healthy, to work to the end of the pregnancy or keep her job and come back to it. Yeah. That wasn't an option then.
You write in the book about Jesse's intense need for privacy. And I guess that's connected to her reaction to exhibiting her work. I mean, there's a lot of work that she created, even after they divorced in the early 70s, that just stayed in storage, right?
Yes.
Did she not like her work out there, or was she, say, worried about the reaction to it, or where do you think that came from?
I would say she was very conflicted, because to a certain extent she was afraid of the reaction that she would get with her work, but at the same time she did try on many occasions, because I was often along for the ride, as in I drove a car, and she, because she didn't drive, I would take her places.
Mm-hmm.
And she would visit galleries, and she would try to interest the world in her art, but she had a hard time fitting in, because her art wasn't necessarily responding to what the conversation was at that time. It was, I won't say it's anachronistic, but it wasn't of a sort that was being done.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was such an individual that she didn't find a way to find a real peer group or a way to show it.
And where do you think that comes from? Is that something that I mean, you write in the book quite candidly about the drinking, and was she depressed?
I would say that she had something that seemed to be the case for most of her life, where her mood would go up and down.
Uh-huh.
And she would be sometimes very cheerful and motivated, and then she would go into a downswing, and her drinking was episodic. It wasn't every day, but when she did, she would be extremely unhappy, and it would be like a crisis, really. And it was a repeated thing that was a pattern that really defined her life.
How is her art received today? It's alongside Harry's at the exhibit that opens this week at the West Vancouver Museum. Do you hear from people that walk through there and as to what they think of what they're seeing?
I often get really positive reaction to her art, and from all the in response to different periods, because she did a great deal of abstract work in the 1950s, and then later on, she returned to the figurative, and she did some oil paintings of historic buildings that were really quite quite realistic and very, shall I say, the word is more, they were rigorous, both technically, but they weren't tight, and they really catch people's eye, and people just love them. In fact, even when she was making those paintings, they attracted people, because she has a way of bringing an image together and a composition that's very well designed, and people get that. So on the one level, she wasn't doing the kind of art that was being done in the 60s by the mainstream, who were moving into videotape and performance art. Her art was more traditional. But it's well received when individuals look at it.
Yeah, well, the book, by the way, for people listening, it does a marvelous job in reproducing the art, photographing it amongst the writing. The ones that caught my eye are the grocery stores, and there's one in the book, and I'm trying to find it as we're chatting. It's at 58th Avenue. I guess 58th and Fraser, is that right?
Yes.
I live on Fraser in King Edward, and so I've seen that. You know, I don't think I've seen this particular store, but I've seen stores up and down Fraser over the years growing up. if you go online, you'll see there's a bit of a renaissance, a sort of nostalgic look back to corner grocery stores that were part of houses that are slowly disappearing. I mean, there are a couple left, I guess, in Vancouver. She was quite fascinated by those.
Yeah, she liked the jumble of advertising juxtaposed with the old residential architecture and the feeling of community and neighborhood that all of that evoked. And other artists have certainly also really responded to that. And there have been quite a few in the last 30 years who have documented these grocery stores. The one that 58th and Fraser is interesting because after it was torn down, the land was zoned back to residential, so you can't tell there had ever been anything like that there. But she, my mother decided to do it as an oil painting and then also as a lino cut. So she was, it was really a study of the elements that made up that kind of a business and how it would look as part of the streetscape.
Yeah, and it's such an intricate piece of Jesse's that you're staring at it for several minutes, you know, and it's not a very big photograph in the book, but I mean you're looking at it very closely because there's so much in there.
And something she taught me about these compositions that she did that had a lot of elements and were clearly representational. Even there was a degree of abstraction, but mm-hmm. you could certainly see what it was. Is that she was very careful about understanding, and this is something that she really worked on and mastered in the days when they were doing abstract expressionist paintings and were learning the lessons that Lionel Thomas had brought back from Hans Hofmann, and that was the notion of how a composition works in terms of balance and tone and energy. And so what she would do in resolving one of these paintings, whether it be a grocery store or a sewing machine or whatever the image was that it was resolved both in terms of the content of the image and also the energy and the play of form so that your eye is actually drawn through it in a way that has been designed.
Now, when you look at your parents' art, do you see or see them or understand them or learn something from the piece of art about them?
I do. They both did a variety of things. They worked in different styles at different times in their lives. There were consistent themes. I would say in my father's work, his was more likely to have humor, which you could access directly. Sometimes you'd even get a laugh out of it mm-hmm. if you look at it and you can see where the jokes are. Jesse's wasn't necessarily as overtly funny, but there's also there are a lot of clues as to what she's thinking about and what she thinks are important themes, and she's alluding to culture and formal considerations. There's one piece that was very interesting that she did in the 1980s, which is in the book, and it's a spherical painting where she's taken the cubist idea of changing perspective, and in fact what you're doing is you're looking into a scene from various angles, but you're looking onto the surface of a ball. So she was intrigued by all the things that one might do formally with painting, right through her life, right to the end.
She also wrote poetry right to the end?
She did.
Yeah.
She had a lot of fun with poetry in the 1990s and early 2000s.
Yeah, you have some of her pieces in here, as well as some of Harry's pieces in here as well, right?
Yes.
How long does a book like this take to put together? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of research.
Well, quite a lot of the research as far as letters, photographs, pieces of art, records, my mother had organized very well. So although she had arguably too many things in her apartment, she had sorted them out very thoroughly. And so it wasn't difficult for me for that to have that part of the research done. What I had to do was fill in the blanks and then create the storyline, which really involved deciding what to talk about and what not to talk about, what story to tell.
And the stuff that you didn't talk about, I'm not going to ask what specifically that might be, but it, sort of what areas would those touch upon?
I would say a fair amount about what they did with their lives after they were divorced, their personal lives. I really tried to focus on their lives as artists.
And Harry was a landscape artist, an architect, I guess is that's the term, which is what you do now. Is there stuff of his that projects that he did that are still around today, around in and around Vancouver?
Quite a few. He started in the 1950s when he was apprenticing. They did primarily residential design in Shaughnessy and Kerrisdale, and then it gradually over the years. They did more and more commercial projects and large public projects. So they would do shopping centers, apartment buildings. His big, the big project that he did in the 1960s, which was a great opportunity, was Park and Telford Gardens. The whiskey company didn't have a way that they could advertise in 1964, and they had noticed that Busch Gardens had been built in Los Angeles. So they asked him to design something that would cover 2 acres in North Vancouver that could be a display garden open to the public. So that provided 5 years of design work, which he thoroughly enjoyed, and it opened in 1969. And it was a delightful thing to do because he was able to design everything, every finial turned on a lathe, every bracket, every detail. And that was really satisfying for him.
Do you paint yourself?
I don't. No.
But you are a landscape architect. One can draw the line from that to Harry. Is there a sense of a sort of Jesse style in the work that you've done?
In the work that I do quite a few illustrations. I do perspective sketches, and I do color them. I do primarily technical drawing, plans and elevations. I would say my work is probably more influenced by my father's style. But it's hard for me to really know because it's so subjective.
Yeah. Did you think Jesse would have liked this book?
I hope so. I hope that, I don't know whether it's the book she would have written. In fact, I don't know that it could have been, but I hope that she's, if she knows about it, that she's thrilled that it's that it has been completed and that people are seeing it and they're reading the story and that her work is now being seen by more people and appreciated.
Yeah, it's a great looking book, and it's a marvelous showcase of both Jesse and Harry. It must be fun having this between it, the two covers, and for, say, family and friends that knew them, that know you, to look at.
Yes, everybody's really really enjoying that part of it, and having things in one place, having the story told, and preserving some things that could so easily go astray and be lost. If they weren't sort of put into context.
Yeah, that's just not just the art, it's the era, it's the people as well, right?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. This is such a wonderful story about art in this province, the art scene here in Vancouver, and as I said, a great document for you and the people around you. Congratulations on this, Adrian, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
The book is called The Life and Art of Harry and Jesse Webb, the latest in the Unheralded Artists of BC series. It's from Mother Tongue Publishing. And do go see the exhibit at the West Vancouver Museum from now until December. Adrian Brown joined me on the line from here, from North Vancouver, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantum.